You're listening to Shift Happens on Kootenai Co-op Radio. So you're tuned in to a new episode of Shift Happens, the spoken word. My name is Jeff.
And I'm Anna.
And we have a very special guest. I mean, I guess we say that all the time, but for Anna, this is especially true, and I will let her explain why.
Yeah, today we're going to be talking to Tess Adams. She is my cousin, and we haven't actually spoken before today for like 20 years, and we just happened to find each other on Facebook, good old Facebook. And Tess is one of those people that I've always found super inspirational. She's had a lot of struggles in her life, and she's always full of sunshine, always smiling, laughing, looking after everybody else, keeping everything happy. And I found out that she's now an author and doing life coaching, and she's just carrying on being super inspirational. So I thought it would be really fun to have an interview with Tess and actually talk to her for the first time in forever. So, hey, Tess, are you there?
I am.
Very cool. So I, not to put you on the spot, but
that's my job.
Our show is called Shift Happens. We talk about the shifts that people have made in their lives, the ways that they've coped with adversity and made things better. And I just wanted you to share with the audience a little bit of the challenges that you've had so that we have a context for what you've done since.
Wow.
I know.
That's quite the question.
I know. I should have warned you, hey?
Well, I can give you a couple of things. I don't want to take too much time, but I was married to a man for a long time, 18 years, and it was about a month in, realized I'd made a horrible mistake, and
that happens to many people.
Pardon me?
I said that happens to many people, I think.
Yeah.
By the way, Tess,
buyer's remorse.
I should introduce you to my partner and co-host, Jeff. He'll
Hi,
be
Jeff.
The comic relief normally. So.
Okay, good. I'm glad we have comic relief. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, for religious reasons, I believed that I needed to stay put. And but when it became physically dangerous for me and my son, that's where I drew the line, and I got us out. And things really started to change for me at that point. And I was feeling very stuck and very trapped, and the stress of it was creating all sorts of health issues, and I was trying to raise my son in a very toxic environment and did my best, but things started improving when I was able to get us out. And my life doesn't look anywhere near the same as what it did back then.
Right. Wow.
How long ago did that happen?
That was about 13 years ago now.
Okay.
And, yeah. I mean, I knew some of that, but I also know that you had a lot of early life challenges and health issues leading up to that point. I mean,
I did. It, yeah.
The list of reasons why you needed to figure out how to be happy and create the life you wanted was long, just like it is for many of us. I mean, Jeff and I here have shared many of our trials and tribulations on the show, so there aren't very many secrets between us and our audience. But so you took all of that. I remember meeting your husband and your son when he was young, and
yeah.
I could see then that it was difficult.
Yeah.
And so what gave you the strength to get out of that situation? Were you still in the church at that point?
No, I was not. I was, for your listeners' information, I was raised in a cult. And
which one?
I lost my mom when I was young, and just before my mom passed, my dad joined the cult. And it still even sounds strange to say that, because it seemed so normal at the time. But anyway, it was very influential as I was growing up.
You and Jeff have that in common, actually. Jeff also was raised in a cult.
Oh, okay.
So cool. There you go.
Yeah.
Cool. Anyway.
Can I ask the name of your cult?
Worldwide Church of God.
Same one.
Guess what? Bada bing, bada boom. Oh, yeah. Herbert W. and Garner Ted. Yeah. The yeah. Plain Truth magazine.
Well, that's so interesting. I didn't even know that that's what it was. I mean, I didn't meet Jeff and learn about the Worldwide Church of God till years later. So that's really interesting. So you left that partway through your relationship with your husband?
I did. I left that when my son was really young. And so it wasn't until he was a little older that I kept hoping that things would turn around, and it just went from bad to worse. And the night that he actually literally beat our son up was the night that basically he drew the line and said, okay, you know, what you gonna do about it? And I said, well, okay, I'm done. And he wanted to use religion to try to repair things later, and I said, no, that was a clear line, like, no. You know, if we're not safe, we're done. And so I left. And just the sheer desire to keep my son safe and to try to help him cope with everything just gave me the strength to stay out and just to keep moving forward. In the middle of going back to university and getting 2 university degrees, right at that time when I had to get us out was during exam time, of course.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
And so you just dig down deep and you just do what you need to do and you know, you keep moving forward. And at that point, the whole focus was, you know, getting Zachary okay. And I have to say that Zachary is more than okay. He is, you know, he's a fabulous human being, and I love him to bits. And I'm so happy that he was able to come out of all that being the good person he is and not having a ton of baggage along the way.
That's one of the joys, actually, isn't it, of ending a cycle, is seeing your own kids come out of the experience healthy and knowing that you're not passing it another step down the line.
And good on you for taking having the courage to do that, because I knew a number of people, other thumpers that I grew up with, that did not have that courage. And, their lives were very difficult, and their children's lives were very difficult. And so, I tip my hat to you.
Thank
and it's also a good thing, too, when you're actually, I mean, the cult did fall apart, ultimately. Yeah. I mean, it splintered off in different directions. But ultimately, I think that I was healthy with the whole situation because I left on my own terms.
Right.
And so I decided that I no longer wanted to be a part of this. And so I went through all of the, you know, the second guessing and all of that. And so when I made the decision to leave, it was clear. Whereas when the organization fell apart, so many people that I knew were just totally scared. They were totally frustrated. And some of them even committed suicide.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was really extreme for a lot of people.
Well, it makes sense, because when you're so used to being told what to do, and then that stops, you don't really even know what you want anymore. You don't know what the right thing is anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you're adrift, right? So, and you become disillusioned, and I get that. But it was my choice as well, and I was hoping that I wouldn't lose family and good friends over it, and the friendships that really meant the most to me, I didn't lose, and I'm still close with them.
Yeah.
And some of them are still involved with it. And, you know, like you said, it is, you know, has its factions in different places, and but slowly but surely they're disintegrating as well. You know, it's but I was most concerned about my relationship with my father, and but that's fine. You know, we're all good. it was harder on him seeing me divorced than me leaving the church. And that was really took some mustering courage to stand up and say, no, I need to do this. It isn't just good enough to just leave.
Yeah.
It needs to be over and done, and I need to be able to move on with my life. And I think it was okay with him if I just said, well, I'm just separating.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't okay to actually go through with the divorce. But ultimately, it's my life, and
mm-hmm.
I deserve to be happy, and I deserve to pursue that. And so I went ahead with it. And in time, you know, he's fine. He kind of shakes his head, not really sure what to do with me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really fit in any of those little religious boxes anymore. But he knows I'm happy and I'm healthy and I'm living exactly the way I'd like to live. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, he can't really argue with it.
Right. Can I ask you a question? When you, turned your back when you left the organization, did you ever have conversations with religious people from other organizations and discover that you're like fresh meat and it's like they get extra points if they can somehow convert you into their belief system? Because that happened to me a lot.
Did it?
Yes.
Okay, so people were targeting you, trying to convert you to their
Yeah, well, religion? I mean, I had trained to be part of the ministry, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, I did the full meal deal. And, it's so frustrating because after I came out of the belief system, and for a number of years afterwards, I had a real, let's just say, a monkey on my back, and just mentioned the word Christian or whatever, and my head would spin on my shoulders, right?
Yeah, it was a bit like the Exorcist.
Yeah, but I came to a point where I just said, look, I mean, I know that I have to heal this hole in my soul, and I am open to discussing belief with mm-hmm. other people of different faiths and, you know, different mm-hmm. spiritual practices. But 99% of the time, even though they talked about being open-minded and blah, 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 it always came down to a sales pitch. And okay. I would see it a mile away, but I would say, look, you know, I'd stick my head in the sand and just hope that this isn't really happening. But it
right.
just happened over and over and over again. And so, yeah, it's really difficult for me to have, even though I want to, okay, I've mentioned this on the show before, where what I would love to do is to sit at a round table where there's not a head of the table or a foot at the table,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
everybody parks their accoutrement at the door, and you
yeah.
just sit down and you discuss what you believe.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so far, that's never happened, even though I would love to have that.
Well, don't we all think we're right? I mean,
well,
you have this conversation, but really, you're trying to prove to people that you...
But that's not what I'm getting at. What I'm saying, like what I've learned, what I've come to believe, is that it's where we find that common ground. So no matter mm-hmm. what belief system it is, there are mm-hmm. certain things. I mean, being good to your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
As well as yourself,
right.
not stealing, I mean, et cetera, et cetera. Those are fundamental things that don't have to refer to a good book.
Right.
Right? So if you mm-hmm. can just kind of have those discussions and find the common ground, then to mm-hmm. me, that's what I would say I was a practicing whatever. Am mm-hmm. I making sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I know from the Facebook watching that I've done of you, the stalking that I've done, you are still a very spiritual human being. You still try really hard to live your life in a way that's impacting other people in the positive.
Yeah, I am.
Do the people in your life that are still religious, do they have any issues with your particular faith now?
No, they don't, because for the most part they're struggling too, because when I left the Worldwide Church of God, I wanted the same kind of experience because we were a very close-knit group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you're kind of, you know, sequestered away and think that you're the only ones that have the truth and everyone else is damned to hell, basically, you know, you get very insular and you support each other and you're there for each other and
mm-hmm.
it's
yeah.
kind of like you against everybody else. And but then you come out of that and you'd like to experience the family feeling. You'd like to experience being part of a group and being of like mind with other people,
mm-hmm.
but that hasn't happened for me either. I don't feel like I fit anywhere, and I don't feel like any church really is. You know, I've tried the odd one, and I've been an active part in a couple, but only for a short period of time, and then I just can't. I can't do it any longer, and
totally understand that one.
Well, we're in the we're in the same boat. But on the other hand, you know, I look at your friends on Facebook and I look at, you know, your particular philosophy and it's the same as ours.
Yep.
And we are a tribe. It's just that we're not the kind of people who are going to be standing on a pulpit necessarily.
I'd try it if people threw money at me. not other objects, though. No tomatoes or anything like that.
Yeah. For me, I've had a very difficult time finding a place that doesn't judge people.
Yeah.
And to me, I am, like, super sensitive to that. I can spot it a mile away. And as soon as I sense a judgment coming in there, I just want to turn and run away. I just don't believe that is helpful. I feel it's destructive. And it just doesn't have a place, and I really, when, you know, you can call it God or the universe or whatever you want, but I don't feel that he wants his people to be judgmental and really hard on each other. And to be quite honest, some churches, that's where you're going to find the most judgmental people there is.
Yeah, I had the same experience with, not even just, I mean, I'd had a little bit of that from your side of the family, from my dad's side of the family, but also from my mom's. They were Mennonite, and it seemed like they were just professional judgment.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all they did was tell me what not to do and why I was bad.
But if I can interject at this point, too, and like something just hit me right now in this discussion, why the judgment exists with these religious beliefs. When they are referring to the quote-unquote good book, and they are following it to the letter, it's a very harsh book.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And so, of course, they know that they're not living up to what the good book says, and so instead of being honest about that, they point the finger and say, well, that person over there is doing it worse than I am.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it just it comes down to a comparison thing because they just don't want to be the one in the hot seat. I don't know if that makes sense, but it just, it just hit me in my little brain.
Okay, well, let's wrap up that particular subject, because I think we've all experienced it, and we have also talked about it on the show, some of the impacts that Jeff experienced from being in that church. So you chose to try to help other people create the kinds of lives that they want, and you said in your bio that in the process, you created the life that you want. So what does it look like? How did you manage that?
Well, I was a classroom teacher. As I mentioned, when my marriage was over, I was finishing 2 university degrees, so I could be a classroom teacher. Previous to that, I was trained to work with a psychologist and with children with autism in their homes to transition them from being in the home to going and beginning school. So I would follow them into the classroom, become their teacher support there, and help them make that transition from just being at home in the parents' care and the psychologist's care to being in the school system.
Right.
And one of the principals that I worked with kept saying, you need to go back to school to get your teaching degree because you need to be in a bigger place. You need to have a classroom to yourself. And he was very supportive and knew the struggles I was going through and really supported me through the way and helped me do that. And so when I graduated, I was in the classroom And I was teaching close to 10 years and became the poster teacher for something we call the restorative approach in the classroom, which is different in that it shifts the focus of academics in the classroom as being number one to actually building relationships with the students being number one, and then which then translates into better academics. So I became very passionate about it and went on to use it. But it meant that during that first year, I created a documentary to show what it would look like and wrote a book about it and, you know, did all kinds of things. And I was sent to different places to train staff and to work with teachers directly. And so I became this poster teacher for the restorative approach, which was wonderful all on its own. But at the same time, they decided to just give me the difficult classes because I could handle it because I was just, you know, a poster teacher.
Yeah.
And it basically just burned me out. It was difficult. And our education system here in Nova Scotia needs a lot of work. And our teachers and our kids, you know, require a great deal more than what they're getting right now. And so as towards the end of that career, I discovered life coaching. And I toyed with it, but I had a misunderstanding as to what it was. And don't ask me where these emails come from because they came, you know, quote unquote, out of the blue. But it wasn't related to anything I signed up for or anything, but somehow they showed up. And there were videos, six short videos, which included what life coaching was not. And it really helped me understand that it really wasn't what I thought it was and that maybe it would be something I would be well suited for. So I took a year and got certified, took the course, and got certified, and things have not been the same since. It's been an amazing journey. And that's really where my life really took a turn for the better.
So where in all of that did you meet your new partner?
He was a good friend of someone that I went to university with as I was getting my teaching degree. And he had lost his wife to cancer about 3 years before that. And I was still at the stage where I wanted nothing to do with men anymore. I was done. That was it. I was, you know, looking at other things in life. I wasn't going to be worried about having a partner.
Exploring and, lesbianism?
Pardon me?
Exploring lesbianism, maybe?
No. But just exploring anything else than worrying about having a partner in my life. And so she said, I think, you know, there's somebody I'd like to introduce you to. And I said, no, do not be fixing me up. And anyway, she invited me for dinner one night and didn't tell me that he was going to be there. And I was, once I put two and two together, I was really not happy with her. And but eventually I started talking to her again. And eventually she convinced me to, you know, at least, you know, entertain the ideas of all our families getting together and having them a meal together, which we did. And he eventually changed my mind. It took him a while, but I don't regret a minute of it. And I'm very happy that he did change my mind. He's a wonderful man. He reminds me a lot of my father. And there's times when I really think my father is here in this house.
Cool.
Okay.
So how many years ago was that?
We've been together 11 years now. We've been married for 10.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So can I ask you something about the gig, about the life coaching?
Sure.
How do you get new clients? Like, do you stand on a street corner and say, psst, hey, bud, do you want your life to be better?
I do it in lots of different ways, and I know I do not stand on the street corner, but
no?
I have friends who are interested in different things. Like, I have a friend who works with a weekly meeting in Halifax in Bedford that is called Angel Hall, and I think it'll be right up your guys' alley. And one night she had me come in and do a talk on my book, and it stirred up some conversation about life coaching in that, and so that led to some things. And I have my Facebook page, my website, of course. I get a lot of people emailing me and asking me questions and stuff because I write a blog, and, you know, they'll leave me comments or they'll send me emails or whatever. And so it's through different means.
Yeah, so for anybody who's interested in reading some of Tess's writing, it's TessAdamsCoaching.com, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I've been reading your blog. I love the way, you know, I tried blogging. We do have a blog for the radio show, and most of the comments I get are, wow, just like way too complicated. I'm really bad at keeping it, you know, short and sweet and
you just
got to
put pictures of cute cats or dogs on it, and then it's totally fine.
We've done shows about quantum physics and manifestation and all that kind of stuff, and it's tough to write about that in a really simple way. But you have done that. I was reading your blog on manifestation and thought, there you go. I could have done something a lot simpler.
Speaking of manifestation, we never really talked about this, but we brought a lady in from Alberta about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, who taught a class. I mean, it was manifestation, but
spoon bending. Yeah.
And there were about a dozen people that participated, and everyone but two managed to bend the spoons.
Yeah.
And it was really, really cool. And she's a life coach as well.
Yeah, that was
a
lot of
fun. Her name is Beth Haley.
You guys would love each other.
Yeah.
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 We have to create a tribe, Tess. So this is the thing. I agree. It's difficult to feel like you're a part of something when you're not a follower. Jeff and I are terrible at following anything. That's why we work for ourselves and do our own radio show.
Yeah.
But it's also really important to find that support network. And we are slowly finding people, but they're kind of, you know, spread out across the continent.
But that's the beauty of modern technology, too.
Yeah.
You don't need to be right next door. I mean, we probably drive everyone crazy if they lived right next to us. She would drive everybody crazy anyway, not me.
Most of my clients I've never met face-to-face before.
Yeah.
You know, they're down the States, they're across Canada, you know, and it's, you know, I have healing modalities that I do as well, and those are people that obviously that I meet face to face with. But some of that changes too from time to time. But it's technology is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. So we can be a part of our support network and tribe, and you can stay in Nova Scotia and we can stay in BC. Although, you never know, maybe we'll hit the road and come see you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking it's been a long time since I've been to BC.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, you got a place.
We could meet in Manitoba or something.
Not to brag, but actually the Kootenays are one of the most beautiful places in the continent, if not the world.
Except for Nova Scotia, of course.
Well, it is beautiful in Nova Scotia, but you know, it's just a gorgeous place that we live in. We have to say that it's got its issues economically, especially, but
then so does Nova Scotia.
Yes, it does.
Right?
Yeah.
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 So can I ask you, okay, going back to the cult thing, it took me a long time to actually see the silver lining in my experience. And did you ever come to a place where you were able to say, okay, yeah, it was screwed up and it was difficult, et cetera, but what did I learn? How did I grow from that experience? Have you ever done that?
Sure. You know, I didn't leave bitter. I can't say I was terribly grateful for the whole thing, but there's parts that I'm grateful for. You know, I believe that my father did it with every best intention in his heart, and, you know, firmly believe that he was doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the people in the church really believed that they were doing the right thing, that their hearts really, for the most part, were in the right place. And I don't dwell on the other stuff that went on.
Right.
And I do have some really wonderful friendships because of it. Nobody can fool me when it comes to a Bible verse.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, and some have tried, and some think that, oh, they're going to put one over on me, and then I give them a Bible verse back, and they kind of, like, what hit me, right? And Anyway, I feel like I got a good foundation in a lot of respects. I certainly was raised with values and morals and all that, and I grew up surrounded by people who really, truly loved me. And, and I am maintaining some friendships out of it. So I wish everyone were able to come out of it and leave the bitterness behind, but some are just not there yet.
Yeah, I know those.
Yeah, I totally get that. Don't you feel like the process of healing is actually the process of finding the beauty in the experience and moving past the pain?
Yeah, like
I've
definitely.
So many people that I've talked to that have had abuse in their lives. When I say, "Well, I became grateful for the experience because it made me who I am." And I recognize so many things, so many strengths that I have from having had a difficult time. And and if you want to stay in victim mode, well, then you're perpetually a victim. If you don't take responsibility for the things that happen in your life, including the things that you don't like, you're never going to feel empowered to change it.
No, and I believe, and this is not acceptable doctrine to a lot of people, but I believe that we all come here with a plan, and we come to learn certain lessons, and we choose the main players in our lives, not necessarily all of them, but we've come with certain experiences lined up, and we also come with free will. But we come to learn certain lessons, and I feel like I've learned a lot, and I feel like because of those lessons, I'm better able to help other people, and it is part of who I am, and, I'm going to continue to grow and all that, but right now I think I have a fair bit to be able to help people with.
Yeah.
And, in my mind, if I'm here and I'm a contribution, then all is well.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I need to be making $1 million. I don't feel like I need to be living in a huge mansion. My needs are met. I'm happy. I have freedom. I have a wonderful home life. I get to have the careers, not just one, but lots of different careers that I absolutely love, that float my boat. And in the midst of all of my careers, I'm being a contribution. And that's my main goal in life.
You're an artist too, aren't you? I love your little stone paintings.
Thanks. Yeah, I create my a line of jewelry, and I create self care products, and it just depends on what day it is.
You're just a whirling dervish.
Yeah.
That actually it has been my philosophy as well. When I ask for perspective on my difficulties as a child, the insights that I got were that I had chosen that situation for a reason. And so I maintain that I'm not a victim. Even when I had abuse at 7, I was not a victim. I chose those.
That's tough for people to wrap their minds around.
I know.
Like, why would someone choose that? But at the same time, and this is, like, this reality is our school. It's where we learn the tough stuff. And, we're not always in it. We do get a break from it, but we're not always in it. But at the same time, as we have those experiences, we're also given the strength to get through them and to survive them and then to heal.
And then help others do the same.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what we try to do with our show, right? Quite often, the people that we interview, they're people that have overcome some serious, serious stuff.
Yeah.
And then the focus is always in the end, okay, what did you learn? What were the positive shifts from that experience or those groups of experiences.
Speaking of serious stuff, I mean, your mom died when you were still quite young.
Yeah.
How old were you when your first mother died?
I was 13 when she passed.
And you signed up for that experience. So how did you survive it? Where did you find the strength to deal with that? I remember, you know, being a 13-year-old at the time and watching all of that unfold and just feeling so horrible for you. But, you know, what does a 13-year-old offer?
No, well, you offered a great deal, actually, because it was right after that that Dad packed our grandmother and my grandfather, my mom's side, and me, and brought us out to visit with you guys for the summer, and that was huge help to me to get me out of Liverpool and to get me in someplace different, you know, with family. Because really the greatest challenge was, you know, me, I don't have siblings, so, as you know, so, you know, it was Dad, and then shortly after Mom passed, my mom passed. So we combined houses, moved in with him, and so here I am, 13-year-old teenager, being raised by two men who didn't know the first thing about raising a teenage daughter, and so that had its own little, you know, thing going on. So, you know, to be able to spend the summer with you and your mom and Grammy and everything was a huge help, and, you know, I still remember a lot of good things from that visit, so... So you were a help.
And, oh, well, there you go. Thank you.
Yeah. And I eventually found answers as I became an adult that helped me piece things together and kind of fill in those holes. And when I was able to connect with my mom, you know, even though she was gone, you know, I feel closer to my mom now than I did, you know, when she was alive. Because, you know, she was sick for a long time when she was here in the physical. And I don't have a whole lot of memories of her being healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you don't mother in the same way. You're not, you know, your life changes when you become that ill. And, but now, you know, she's not in pain anymore, and I feel a lot closer to her. And, you know, I talk to her every day, and she's part of my life, and she was actually part of where I am right now, because I've always felt drawn to living where I am right now in Port Dolly, and... she was very instrumental in saving this plot of land for us to be able to buy before it even went on the market. So, you know, so it's, I know this is going to sound really strange for some of your listeners, but, you know, our loved ones who crossed over, do have a big part to play in our lives.
Nice. You know, I don't know if you, even recognized it back when we met in Florida. Do you remember that when Zach was little?
Yeah. Yeah,
I remember trying to corrupt you back then. I remember thinking...
I don't remember it that way at all.
Oh, no? I remember thinking, God, I got to get this girl out of this church.
Yeah.
And talking you into not going to church that day, if I remember correctly. So
yeah.
I felt like, oh, my, I've been a corrupter. But that was fun
for me. I've been that many times. Do you not find that sometimes, like, especially if you have someone before you that's especially judgmental and anal retentive and they're cramming their stuff down your throat, there's like this evil little thingy on my shoulder that just says, go for it, dude. Go for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean, but no, I don't have any problem shutting that one up. I always listen.
Oh, yeah.
He's terrible. He's evil.
Yeah.
No, I just remember feeling like your husband was really oppressing you then. And
yeah,
it's tough coming in and out of somebody's life just so briefly and kind of seeing the trajectory. And I'm sure lots of people did that with mine as well and thought, like, why is she doing that?
But, okay, not that I'm trying to defend the belief system, and I know we said that we wouldn't talk about it anymore, but the truth of the matter is that, you know, that particular organization, I do have to say, they did try to follow the book to the letter.
Yeah.
And the problem is that there are so many conflicting messages in that book that which do you choose? And they would talk about God being the head of Jesus and Jesus the head of the church and the church the head of the man and the man the head of the woman, et cetera, et cetera. And then all this stuff about spare the rod and you hate the child.
Yeah.
You know, this kind of stuff. And it's like, well, I mean, I can understand why there was so much anger on the part of especially the men, because they were frustrated. And when their families did not toe the line, it was a direct reflection on them. So quite often it would turn into abuse. And so I'm able to see that now after it's been, you know, quite a long time since I was a part of it. And it's helped me to make peace with it. And but again, the bottom line is, how can you give your power away to something that is not completely the Word of God, not even close? And I'll probably get shot after this this interview, but oh well, it was nice knowing you.
Yeah, if you do that sort of thing, put a bubble around him after the show.
But I think it's really important to have these kinds of discussions, though, because so many people have either had direct interaction with extreme religion or indirect through friends or family, whatever, and we've all been infected by it. And so having these discussions, I think, is really, really important so that we can come to that healthy middle ground. And is that not what needs to happen south of the border?
Yeah. Speaking of south of the border, when I was down in North Carolina, I was asked to do a little workshop type of thing around my book. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting in a restaurant, and there was a group of people that a friend of mine had brought together. And she really didn't say a whole lot, but she just basically gave them the gist of what my book is about. And so these lovely ladies showed up, and we were having a little bite to eat, and one of them came in a little late, and she sat down beside me, and she was not exactly the friendliest of the lot, you know, very quiet. I mean, not rude, but just really quiet. The other ones were very easy to talk to and very friendly and outgoing. And but anyway, that's fine. I said, okay. In my mind, I'm thinking, I'm going to find a way to be able to communicate with this person and help her, because she seems a little, you know, closed up. And so we eventually got talking, and she, right out of the blue, asked the whole entire table if they would share their favorite Christmas tradition with her, because she's looking for ideas.
Right.
And I looked at her, and I said, what do you mean you're looking for ideas? And she said, well, I've not celebrated Christmas before. And I said, why not? And she said, I was raised in a cult. I said, which one? And she said, the same one that you and I were part of.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, no kidding. And she went to Ambassador University, and she went, you know, like the whole shebang, right?
Yeah, me too.
Yikes, Jeff went to Ambassador.
College,
maybe they know each other.
Yeah. Never know.
Mm-hmm.
But then the conversation really started. So, you know, and she's in a good place. You know, she's dealt with things, but she had a lot to deal with her parents, because they weren't so understanding, you know. But and it was a little different for her, having the experience that she had at Ambassador and stuff too. I wasn't there, so I didn't have that part to deal with directly, you know.
Right.
But anyways, it is a small world.
Oh, yeah.
It is good to ask the questions, and to, because you just don't know when you can help somebody. You don't know what they're going through until you start asking.
Well, just the simple fact that, I mean, okay, me hearing that you were part of that organization, whether we had this discussion or not, I mean, it definitely helps having the discussion, but just having a conversation with someone who survived it. And is healthy, and not just survived, but came out shining on the other side, that's very empowering. And so transpose whatever belief system, or being part of a business cult. I mean, tell me what major corporation in this world is not a cult.
Yeah.
It's all the same stuff. it's all, you know, the trickle-down thing. You have a couple people at the top of the shift pile, and everyone is supposed to just toe the line.
Yeah.
Right down to destroying the planet in which we live.
Yeah.
So it's no different.
No.
And so that's the thing. When I can see other people standing up on their own two feet and moving forward with their lives in spite of all of the naysaying and all the other crap, that makes me feel that it's more possible for me.
Yeah. And I've gone through, you know, as I've already mentioned, I've gone through trying to fit into different religions. And then I just got to the point where I realized I didn't need a religion. I can be spiritual. I don't really want to be religious.
Yep.
I want to be spiritual. Mm-hmm. And I want to change. I want to feel connected to everything, everyone, and really not lose touch with that. And
amen.
That doesn't happen sitting in a church pew. And so for me, I guess you could say my church is when I go out into a forest or when I go to the beach or you know, sometimes when I'm sitting in the middle of a garden, that's my church. That's where I feel connected. And that is so not Worldwide Church of God.
Oh, no kidding. You know? No kidding.
But that's what's true for me, and that's the question I keep asking myself. What is true for me?
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, not concerned with what's true for somebody else, but what is true for me? What really resonates with me? And, you know, I just keep asking myself that question. And I don't judge the people that aren't in the same place. You know, we're here for different reasons. And,
yep.
You know,
and some people need the structure.
Yeah.
At the, you know, whatever place they are in their lives, they need that structure.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I've found the same. I mean, it's like, okay, coming to the end of my experience with all of that, I tried to join other religions or belief systems, whatever, and that didn't pan out. I tried working for other businesses like Fortune 500 and all of that. And the thing that I learned from my experience in the cult was that I really do need to listen to my own voice, because if I say that I'm part of this company, but the company tells me to do something that is against my internal fiber, my core, then it's no different than being part of a religious system that tells me that this is what I'm supposed to do in God's name.
Right.
And so I ended up being just
a lone
voice, miserable old crank.
Rebel without a clue.
Yeah, rebel without a clue. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're here for a reason, and you know, it seems like you're here to help a lot of people, and you can't do that if you're working for somebody else.
No, definitely not.
Degree.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
And whenever I get invited to be part of someone's church, I just say, no thanks. God makes me nervous when he gets indoors. Yeah.
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 There you go.
There you go.
So, Tess, we have a couple minutes left. Anything in particular you want to share with our listeners? You have any new book you want to pitch, or how do they get in touch with you? Other than, well, they can go to TessAdamsCoaching.com, right?
Yeah, they certainly can.
And is it like a 900 number? They pay $10 a minute for coaching.
Now there you go. Maybe I should look into that, hey, Dad?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A better use for a 900
You'd
number.
You'd be rich.
No.
Yeah, well, you know what? I am rich. I am very rich. And my bank account says, don't think so, but I am very rich. I have everything I need, and I'm happy, and I'm healthy, and hey, you know, and as you noticed on my blog, that I'm really exploring the whole tool of intention, and it is quite the wild ride, and I'm loving it. So, yeah. So no, I just keep checking in on my blog, and because I just never know what's around the corner.
Well, my intention is that you get really, really rich, and you give me all of it.
Yeah.
How's that?
You can't control other people's intention. That's the kicker.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it was good meeting you, Tess.
And you.
Yes, mm-hmm. And for anybody who wants to connect with Tess, I'm going to create a page on shifthappens.media, and we'll have contact info for her there, and check out tessadamscoaching.com to read more of what she's written. And it's been a joy to talk to you again, Tess. It's just so cool, and we will stay in touch.
Please do, yeah.
And thank you for coming and spending the day with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. It's been fun.
We'll talk again, I'm sure.
Good.
Okay.
All right.
Have yourself a good day.
So we're going to finish up with the fortunate ones, the bliss, from your neck of the woods.
Cool.
And for all of our listeners, thank you for listening, and listen to us next week. It'll be something different. It always is.
It always is.
Can't find a foe or friend to do this darkness in. Shadows creep and bend. I cannot pretend that I don't miss my home or that I'm not alone. Now I must atone for all the time I've wasted. This is what I chose. Long nights and endless road. All this letting go. Who was I to know? I miss my family. If they could only see all that I've become. Alone and on the run. If this is all there is, maybe that's okay. Believing in the bliss. Wishing my time away. A tender-hearted sadness pulls me through the day. But that's all right, my heart is okay. I am fading under dying light. Reaching through the dark for words to say it right. I am restless. Losing sleep, kept up by promises I knew I'd never keep. If this is all there is, maybe that's okay. Believing in the bliss, wishing my time away. A tender-hearted sadness pulls me through the day. That's all right, my heart's okay. My heart. Inspiration, where is urgency? They are like passing ships, they keep eluding me. I've got a good heart, and I've got able hands. Give me back my eyes, lead me to the land. If this is all there is, maybe that's okay. Believing in the bliss, wishing my time away. A tender-hearted sadness pulls me through the day. But that's all right, my heart is okay. If this is all there is, maybe that's okay. Believing in the bliss, wishing my time away. A tender-hearted sadness pulls me through the day.